Today I'm in Bristol with Dan Jones, and it's great to be here, Dan.
Pleasure to have you here.
You get the first question, which is, when and where did we first meet?
Wow, we first met, I think it was in your house.
Was it in our house? I think it might be in our house.
I think it was in your house. So I had been employed by Bath and Wells Diocese to work in the deanery of, what was it called? Kentsham? Chew Magna Deanery.
Was it Chew Magna?
And I heard about this youth group that met over in Winford. So I got in touch, and it was you and your husband that were running the group.
It was.
So that was probably 19 years ago.
It was before our first child was born, and she's going to be 18
yeah,
in September.
So I studied in 99, so my word, that's a long time ago. Haven't we changed? Not at all.
Not at all. Well, we've changed somewhat, I think.
Well, you're ordained and I'm not, for starters. Stating the obvious.
So that's the when and where did we first meet question. Were we making pizza? Was it a pizza
night? Was a pizza night. Yes, it was.
Did you have any of the sweet pizza?
Oh, do you know, I can't remember. Probably no, me with my sweet tooth.
I think the boys made
it was chocolate spread. Yeah, but it was more chocolate spread than pizza, yeah. If I remember right. It was a bit of a mess.
Yeah, I thought it might be reasonably okay to eat, but it really wasn't. So, chocolate spread pizzas aside,
yes.
Next most important question is, do you drink tea?
I do drink tea, yeah. First thing I drink in the morning.
And what's your favourite cup of tea?
Oh, it's just standard. But, you know, we've tried the PG Tips, we've tried Yorkshire tea, but Tetley seems to be the one that we tend to buy. When it's half price, we buy it in bulk, and it's the first thing we do in the morning, have a cup of tea.
And is that your favourite cup of tea of the day, the first cup of tea in the morning?
Yeah, oh, definitely.
Do you have a schedule? Do you drink coffee later on?
I do drink coffee as well. So I tend to drink coffee more in the office because the tea bags here are rubbish. But as a team, most of us are coffee drinkers, so we have kind of like a team coffee.
I need to test the office tea because if it's the tea I like, then I'm going to be disappointed that you've said it's rubbish.
Yeah, it's one of those things where one tea bag's not enough. You've got to put two tea bags in to get a decent taste of tea.
I'm going to have to try this out again.
You're
going
to have to, yeah.
There's the next question.
Yes.
Is the big question.
Okay.
It's the question I'm asking everybody.
Okay.
Whatever their background.
Okay.
How do you respond to the statement, Christianity in the UK is not dying but sleeping?
That's a very good question, actually, because I think you could probably argue both words. You know, when you look at statistics, over the last 15, 20 years, it has been on a steep decline. There are signs that it is improving slightly, but I think we won't notice the difference probably into the next 10, 30 years. I'd like to say probably if I had to choose the two, I would... sleeping. Why? Because dying sounds like it's coming to an end. Sleeping... gives that impression that rest, time to chill out, refocus, and prepare ourselves for what lies ahead. So I think sleeping is a bit more positive than dying.
For us, the statement isn't my statement. It's
I was going to say, where is it from?
It's from a Telegraph article by Tim Stanley. And I read it and I thought, I don't know what I think about that. Because we have real issues with Sunday mornings.
Yes.
But our non-Sunday things, or non-Sunday morning things, are all growing.
Yeah, and unfortunately the Church of England is always still focused on the Sunday attendance figures, and unfortunately it seems that that's how we show growth, decline, and the state of our congregations. But I agree with you totally.
So in Killearn...
Yes.
I tried for years and years to get people to come on Sunday mornings, children to come on Sunday mornings, and just there are a few families who do. But then, because they don't have school on Friday afternoons, we started a Friday afternoon thing, which is now called Shine, and it's basically a service. It has lots of craft and stuff, but we have prayers and a story and songs. So
it's church.
So we might have 30 children and 20 adults at that. It's our biggest single worship activity in Killearn.
Yeah.
Our regular ones.
That's great.
But it's not on Sunday.
No, and the Sunday congregation don't see it as church.
Yeah, well, it's this real strange,
confuddled kind of what does church in essence do and what's it for?
I think we're in a kind of cultural shift moment.
Oh, massively. Where we I wouldn't even say we're in a shift. I think we're in a bit of a kind of a stopgap where people just don't know. So our generation, Sundays is the weekends aren't weekends anymore. Mm. It's a 7-day week. But I think a lot of our congregations who are of a certain age are still in that bracket of it's a 5-day week, weekends, Sunday is church, but Sunday everything's open. You got young children, sports clubs is obviously the classic that happens on a Sunday morning, and it just brings conflicting, well, what do I do? Do I kind of drag my kids, my family to church, and we do that? And I think offering that option, that alternative service congregation, it's seen massive growth. And I agree with you, it's finding that niche. And actually, sometimes I think trying to bolt two very different congregations together doesn't necessarily work. I remember having a conversation with one of our team years ago before she joined us, and she had the same problem as you of the Sunday congregation kind of moaning that they couldn't see this other the Saturday people, but they weren't willing to go along and see these people on a Saturday. It was kind of our terms and our terms only, because church only happens on a Sunday. And it's a thing I hear a lot, and drives me mad.
Only some people have a real theological drive that the Lord's people should be meeting on the Lord's Day.
Yes.
I'm not sure our society is in a position where that is always possible.
No. And if we want to look at theologically about the Sabbath, does it say that that's a Sunday?
There are some people who would
Jewish
argue.
Jewish is Saturday, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's why it's Sunday, Dan, isn't it? Because it's the day after the Sabbath.
Maybe, yeah. But as I said, culturally now, Sunday isn't classed as a Sunday as it was when we were growing up. Nothing was open on a Sunday. No. There was nothing to do.
1986 was the change in the
was
Sunday.
Was it the change? So what was
86 or 87.
Yeah, and I can remember that. But of course, everything's open now. You can go to the cinema if you want to on a Sunday morning.
Mm, yeah.
Not that I've ever done that before.
I don't know if you could go to the cinema on Sunday morning or not, Dad.
Right answer.
Because I'm always working.
You're always working, yeah.
I wanted to ask you about young people. I haven't got you to tell me what your job title is.
So I'm Youth and Children's Advisor for the Diocese.
Yeah.
Read into that what you want. But primarily I'm there to support, resource and energise our churches in their ministry and mission with children, young people and families. And I'm guessing anyone under the age of probably 40.
Yeah.
Exactly.
When they changed the youth work definition to under 40, I was already ordained. And I'm like, okay, is someone going to provide me with some youth work?
I think legally it's 25, but when you consider families and parents, I suppose the gulf in our church is that by and large it's the kind of the 40 and under that we're losing or that we've lost. So I tend to try and, because there's no one else in the diocese with a similar brief to me, so I've kind of adopted it. But it's something I'm really passionate about, the whole thing of sharing faith in the home.
Well, I'm going to ask you your next question now.
Go on then.
What are the most challenging things facing young people today, and are they different from when we were young?
Oh, do you know, that's a really good question, because I think people will think it is different, but I don't think it is. You know, I think a lot of what young people and a lot of adults struggle with is identity. Who am I? Why am I here? And what's my purpose in life? And obviously there's a lot of different factors that can influence, hinder that. But I think ultimately for young people, it's about identity. I really do. Certainly the ones I work with, looking at my own personal life as well. And that was a struggle of actually accepting and loving me for who I was. And thankfully I found that through a group of friends who happened to be Christians. But, you know, our young people struggle with that whole thing of self-worth and acceptance, love. You know, a lot of them have grown up in homes that, well, if the parents are still together is a bonus, or made some kind of commitment, whether that's marriage or whatever. And I think that whole yearning to be loved and to love is ultimately one of the biggest issues that generations have battled with in the past and will continue to battle with in the future, whatever that may look like. So have you got any thoughts on that?
I think it's really interesting. I think it's true. One of the people who works with young people that I've interviewed, she said she felt that it was difficult, the kind of constancy that sometimes social media gives people.
Yeah.
If you're struggling at school, you used to be able to get away from school.
Yeah.
Whereas now, if you're on social media and you're really struggling in that with your identity in that place, that actually there aren't any safe places anymore. And she felt that was quite unhealthy for some people.
Yeah. And it just gives you that opportunity to explore and hear from such a wide variety of voices. And of course, well, we didn't have that in our day. You know, who were the sort of the main influence and people was well, teachers, if you had a youth worker or a vicar or a parent or a role model of some kind. But if you're struggling with something, you can just, well, Google words into, and these videos and comments will come up, and you just don't know what's there that can affect them both positively and negatively. So I think that whole thing of identity and just whole social awareness of what that might look like, you know, scares me. You know, I've got two young children, trying to do my best to bring them up in a Christian household, whatever that might look like. They've got questions, they're being influenced outside the parental boundaries. I don't know what's the right word, but yeah, it's just really, really scary.
Yeah, it's that thing, isn't it, when you send them to nursery, they are having some sort of external influence.
Oh, totally, yeah. But just by hearing a conversation on a bus or walking down the street, the conversation, your eldest is 18.
Nearly
18, and just think of that point of coming up to, well, they're legally an adult, take on responsibility of their own life, and you think, well, have me and Ian prepared them for this next part of their lives? Certainly from a church perspective, I think we're not very good on the whole discipleship and nurturing faith, but I'm sure there's probably a question that'll come up about that in the future. And so I think things are very different, but the issues are still the same. You know, the pressures and demands, depending on upbringing. Parents always want their children to aspire to do stuff, but certainly education has changed a huge amount. You know, we look at the levels of anxiety and young people on medication for stress or whatever. The whole thing of mental health was around in our day, but it certainly wasn't as public and talked about as much. When you look at our parents' generation, well,
I think that.
I don't think it was talked about at all.
I think there are some aspects of that which is really healthy, that people seem to be more aware of what's going on and more aware of in sometimes what's happening to their friends.
Yeah.
So I think there are some aspects of that are really good.
Yeah, the sharing of just looking at recently, thinking of Simon Thomas, who, you know, lost his wife, really couldn't even imagine what's been like, but to be openly to express his struggles online has created a kind of a support group for people who can connect and relate to that and respond. So that kind of public sphere is good in many ways, but obviously, you know, there's a huge amount of pitfalls as well.
So two more specialist questions.
Yes.
If you could change one thing about the Church of England, what would it be?
I could. Oh, do you know what? I remember being asked this by Bishop Mike in a senior leadership team, and it was completely off the cuff. And do you know what? The more I thought about it, if I could take canon law and shred it, I think that could help and be a hindrance. But if I could change anything in the Church of England, I think I'd give permission to all our ordained clergy to start from scratch. Think about their original calling into ordination, what's the things that they're passionate about, and to not worry about all the things that they've probably inherited, whether that's the services, to just go, right, okay, start from scratch. Build your ministry around whatever you think God is calling you to do, and if that's around going around and have cups of tea with your parishioners and having the time to do that, to get to know them, and just see how church mission ministry can grow from those passions, and not have to worry about doing Book of Common Prayer on a Sunday morning or this, that and the other, but just that organic of letting God work through the things that excite you and where you can sense the Holy Spirit working. So that would be my kind of, I know it's a bit of a pipe dream, but I speak to so many clergy who seem to be shackled for whatever reason, for a number of different reasons, and go, you think, oh, if you had the time to do the things that you wanted to do, God would really bless them. Not saying that God doesn't bless the other things, but just to have that freedom to go, do you know what? I don't have to do this. I can just go.
Yeah,
be Jesus.
the problem with most clergy jobs is that they're A, they're too big, and B, they are requiring people to work in all personality type strengths.
Yeah.
And what happens, or what can happen, is that you end up bogged down in the things which aren't your strengths.
Yeah.
And that saps all your energy for doing the things which are your strengths. So, that's really interesting.
So I think that, just start from scratch. I think what an amazing social experiment that could be, just to have that permission from my high, say, do you know what? If it was the Archbishop or the Bishop, say, I will deal with the flak. Mm. But just go, be incarnational, just sense where God's asking you, telling you, wanting you to go. Just go with that gut reaction and be church in that way.
Wow. Yeah. And you can tell I've been a vicar for too long, because I'm thinking, legally, that would be a nightmare.
Well, exactly. So the whole canon law thing, just to have that permission, just to go and be God's people.
Yeah.
You know, Jesus kind of had no... Oh, he had massive expectations, but he was a kind of a kindred spirit that just went and did.
Okay, so
maybe we should have a 3-year timeline and then reflect on it.
I'm going to ask you, what's the most rewarding thing about youth work?
Well, we think about the young people that are in your group, for example, and I know you had more of an influence on them than I did, but seeing where they are now, and some of them have an active faith, some of them you don't know where faith is, but I think just journeying with them, spending time with them and living in that moment with them is one of the biggest rewards. You just don't know where that's going to take you or them, but living in the moment, I think, is incredibly rewarding and enjoyable and fun. Yeah, it's hard. Yeah, it brings tears. But I've always kind of been my kind of thing for working with young people. It's the unknown which excites me and rewards. And I know that for some people that's a real struggle. But is it any different to working with any other age? I don't know. But certainly for young people, you know, they have an energy, gifts, a passion for God and the church that sometimes doesn't get seen. And certainly for me, coming up to 20 years of, I suppose, ministry, that never tires or wavers. It's the sort of thing I hold on to. So,
I guess one of the things which was really important for me is that often ministry is about planting a garden and moving away.
Yes.
And you don't get to see what's happened. You don't know whether what you've planted has grown or not, and that's fine, and that's part of what ministry is about. But we went to a dedication service last summer, and there were all sorts of things which annoyed me about the theology of the service, so I won't go there. So one of our youth group was having their second child dedicated, mm-hmm. and I think there were 7 or 8 other members of our youth group there in church that day, and I thought that was an incredible thing to see, that they were there, they were still engaged with their faith, they'd come from other churches where they were, and that was just a really great thing to see that. Because you don't often get to go back.
No.
And to see how well they've grown in that way. That was really good. It was great. So there's that particular thing. And you don't... But there are other people that we have no idea who come to youth work for a year or 18 months and we never see again.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's strange.
It's tough, but... And sometimes you've got to really look for the reward.
Mm.
But often... Like I said, it's those little glimmer, those moments where you just go, yeah.
Yeah. We come to our last question.
Yep.
Which is, what's your favourite thing that begins with T?
God, do you know what? This was a really kind of tricky one, because you know what you say, you'll go away and think about it and come up with... the first thing that comes is Thai food. I love Thai food. So there you go.
That's the second vote for Thai food.
Oh, really? Oh, well, there
yes.
we go. Yeah, it's. I don't know what it is about tea, but also, I automatically jump to, what's your favourite thing with tea? You think of food or drink.
Okay.
And I think because your thing was on tea, you think of, Thai food.
Thai food. Okay, so Beth Burris from the Church Army also chose Thai food.
Well, there we go.
So there you go. And she's running the Explore programme for Church Army. Maybe it's a youth work thing.
Maybe.
Anyway, Dan, it's been so lovely to see
That's
you again.
That's all right. Pleasure.